Congressman Ben Rifle of the 1st District of South Dakota. Congressman, you were very active in the 30s on the Rosebud and Pine Ridge reservations, I believe, in connection with this Indian Reorganization Act, were you not?
Yes, I was. I was a farm agent at Ogallala, South Dakota, on the Pine Ridge Reservation in 1933, when the bill was being considered by the Indians on the reservations in regional conferences at the same time that it was being considered here in the Congress prior to enactment. And I was impressed with the possibilities of the bill. The original plan was to set up a well-coordinated system of government by tribes that would, one of the primary benefits that I thought would come from it would be that if they did go through with their judicial system, whereby the tribal courts would be tied in with a federal system of courts, this would then correct the weakness in Indian courts where there is no appeal from the tribal organization or from the tribal courts. And that, of course, persists to the present time and is one of the weaknesses in the judicial system of tribal courts now. That is attempting to be, which is being, some attempts are being made to correct it. Well, there were many aspects of the original plan written out in the bill that was presented to Congress that got changed. I think while it was a plan for communal use of the tribal property and a communal or in the development of the property on a communal basis, I think there was in the minds of some that this was identified with communism in some way or another, when really it was nothing more than enlarging upon the present tribal holdings of especially land in common, that is the case even today in many of the reservations that aren't allotted, like the Navajos in large part, and also there are on practically all the other larger reservations in the Dakotas and Montana, certain areas of land that are held in tribal ownership, which is held in common. And it was thought to develop these program, these properties on a communal basis. Well, they, one of the major defects, I think, in the proposal, at least as far as the members of Congress were concerned at the time, that it was divesting an individual of his property without his consent. Some of the provisions of the proposal would take land that was allotted in severalty to an individual and put it back into common ownership. And this was believed to be a violation of personal property rights without due recourse to the courts. So it all finally came out in a much modified program known as the Wheeler-Howard Act and subsequently designated as the Indian Reorganization Act in 1934, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. Well, I happened to be on the Pine Ridge Reservation, as I said, as a farm agent, and I was impressed with the whole program. So by the time it finally became law, I, having followed it very closely and could speak the and write the Sioux language, took one of these old ABC charts that they used to use in Indian schools on a little stand. And on one side, I would write a little synopsis of each section. I think there were some 18 sections to the bill, or really to the law. And then right alongside of it, I would put the Indian translation and draw some pictures to illustrate what it meant. And I did this in my farm district, and then when the tribal leaders met in reservation-wide meeting, they were having it explained to them, but the people from the district in which I was working, attending the meeting seemed to be better informed. The others wanted to know where he got the information. He said, well, I was down there helping with it, so superintendent of the reservation at the time was James H. McGregor, sent word down for me to come up and put on my chalk talk with the tribal leaders, and as a result of this experience, then I went with him from one district on the reservation to another to explain the law.
Were you hired to do this?
I was a farm agent, of course, a superintendent, a federal employee on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. The superintendent had authority to delegate any of his employees to jobs for, other assignments than their primary assignment for short periods of time. So I was with the superintendent at the meetings on the reservation. There was a considerable agitation against the legislation because the older members of the tribe and some of the younger ones too felt that what was going to happen here was that their lands were going to be taken away from them and put into common ownership. And this they were very fearful of, and I didn't blame them for this. And I think this was a carryover from the original provisions of the bill, or rather the original bill that was proposed by John Collier, who was then the Commissioner of Indian Affairs. And he had held, as I said, regional meetings where the tribes had come in, and he was trying to develop the receptivity on the part of the Indians for the legislation.
They had one in Rapid City.
They had one held in Rapid City. I remember I attended that one back in those days. I was just a young person in the government service, but became very much interested in it, so I took annual leave and went up there and spent all of the time at the conference listening to what was going on. Well, there was this opposition then to the bill itself, or to the act. Now, the act was unusual in that unless the Indians turned it down, it would go into effect. They would have a referendum on it. So the law was passed by the Congress, subject to acceptance or rejection by the tribe. So this made it necessary then to go out and explain to the tribes, prior to elections to be held, the provisions of the act. And so with the little experience I had on the reservation, explaining it with my charts, there was a person by the name of Joe Jennings, who was a superintendent of Indian education for South Dakota, and he was designated by the Commission of Indian Affairs to be to take responsibility for explaining the Indian Reorganization Act to tribes throughout South Dakota, and I think in Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota. So his being aware of what I was doing at Pine Ridge asked the superintendent if I couldn't be used to do this explanation with him on the in the Sioux country, because I spoke the Sioux language. So I traveled throughout the state of South Dakota to various Indian tribes that were scheduled to vote on the legislation and explained its provisions. And then following that, as the some tribes adopted and some did not, I remember Crow Creek was one tribe that turned it down, Sisseton was another, and I think they turned the legislation down completely. And I believe also Yankton Reservation.
Mm-hmm.
And by this time, this was in July of 1935, the commissioner then established under the law some field agents and to help with the promotion of the legislation on the Indian reservations, and so I was designated as one of the first to be a field agent in July of 1935. I got the appointment, and I came down to Washington in March of that year and was down here a couple of months getting some background information on it. And then I was headquartered in Pierre after that, when I got the appointment in 1935. And I was in Pierre until 1942 when the war broke out, and I was ordered to active duty. But during that seven-year period, I worked with Indian tribes to explain the provisions of the law, and when they got that done, then the tribes had to, if they wanted to move ahead, could adopt the Constitution and bylaws, and then following that, they could establish a corporate charter. All of these had to be explained, drafted by the tribal members, and then voted upon in open elections, and you got a great deal of opposition and much excitement for it, and you camps developed, one against the other. And in the Dakotas, we had what was a group called the Old Dealers. You see, this emerged out of the Roosevelt New Deal period. And so Collier, then commissioner, said that we would have a New Deal also for the Indians. So this was dubbed the New Deal. And anyone who was for it was a New Dealer, and the older members who saw themselves losing control because an elected council set up pretty much a pattern after our own kinds of elections. I think that the older people, older leaders, felt themselves losing control because up until then, for instance, at Pine Ridge, they had what was considered seven districts on the reservation, and the seven districts each had, I think, 10 delegates who would come to a tribal council, and they'd sit there and carry on for 3 or 4 days. This would be 80 or 90 people coming together. And this was a kind of a traditional system where they didn't have much, if any, power at all, but they did have an opportunity to express their views and to give vent to some of their feelings. And I think they saw themselves losing this, what little influence it had, at least their participation in the system.
You think it was an old generation of leadership opposing
that? It was the old generation of leadership that was opposing it, and to this day you have this older group that I think still look upon themselves as the so-called old dealers. The term is, the new dealers are called the old trecha, meaning the new way of life. And then they had the old timers.
Did you notice in the opposition any difference between the full bloods and the mixed bloods?
Yes, well, you had the old timers, the older people were largely full bloods. And then you had among them, I think, some opportunists. I think at least they appeared to me to be that then, and I think I would not change my mind now, who tended to help the older ones. And they themselves could not see themselves getting into the new system, either by lack of education or because of maybe their prior lack of leadership, but they were in a position, because they could speak English, could identify themselves and provided a means of communication on the part of the so-called old dealers against the new program. So that, by way of background, is how I got thrown into the thing. The Indian Reorganization Act itself, of course, set up by the elective process in open and free elections